applied in the Spanish conditions and also applied in the conditions of these politically motivated international brigaders, because the overwhelming result of majority of the international brigade were consciously in there. Now, I would say that we had probably a higher proportion of people that came as volunteers, not as, of course, we had the majority, in my opinion, were still communists who came in the British battalion. But there were a number of people that were not communists and didn't become communists, including liberal people, Labour Party people, you know. But the Labour Party people and the others, I think, I didn't see any resistance to this, because the commissar was also a, how shall I put it, it was something that they could lean on, it was something they could go to, and that. And you weren't going through the sort of formal discipline. I mean, you may have to do it on certain basis, but the commissar was a sort of, how shall I put it, the ladder or the help that made it possible for you to get your point of view shoved upstairs, yeah, as well.
Did you have any guidance on your point of view that you put across? I mean, did your immediate superiors brief you on the line you had to put across, or was it entirely from you yourself?
It came from me. Well, I knew, I'll put it this way, I knew what the objectives were, that, let's say the military objectives in the particular cases. I knew what the aim was when the training was being undertaken. But they didn't tell me, now you'll do this or that or the other thing, or we want you to do this. They just put before me their problem, what they were aiming to do militarily. And it was my job to adopt that and apply it in the circumstances that were operating, whether it was at a company level or whether it was down among the lads on the job, you know?
Did you have much contact with your superiors?
A certain amount, but as a matter of fact, the main contact I had, and I wouldn't say it was spasmodic, but it wasn't a very regular every day or anything like that, was with Marty and Vidal, either of them. If it was a very important issue, then probably Marty would ask me to see him or come along and something like that. And
this was back at
Albacete, because his headquarters were there. You've seen that from the arrangements that were made. When we went to Madrid, this party of us, to visit the front, well, it had to be done with the authority of Vidal and Marty, you see. Some things Vidal would take on himself to do, others it would be the old man himself. And he was a rather domineering guy. Yeah.
Did you also meet the people under you, for example, the various battalion commissars?
Well, I mean, for instance, I had discussions with a Springhall. Quite full discussions, and I worked with him and had talks with him and that sort of thing. And by the way, I left him when the battalion was being formed almost exclusively to do the work with the battalion. It wasn't my job then to walk in over him, and I had talks with him about it, and we were both members of our own central committee. And therefore, it wasn't as if I didn't know him and he didn't know me and that sort of thing. So we had a quite comradely association, yes, together.
How many people were in the commissariat were actually under you?
Oh, Christ, I couldn't give it exactly. You see, it was in the process of being developed. For instance, there was a political commissar in the American battalion. Mm. And by the way, I didn't, although I was working with them. For instance, the Bulgarian, he was working with the Slavs, you know. Now, we'd had discussions together, and I knew a little Russian, and he knew a little English, and we got on that way. We had discussions and that sort of thing together, but it wasn't my job to tell him what to do anymore. It was his job to tell me what to do. It was just sort of an exchange of opinions and informing one another about problems that were developing, and maybe getting tips as well about things that were happening and so on. These were the kind of things that, and that's why I did have very after the number one company, and after the Americans started to really get formed up and get going. And by the way, they were taken out of our village to another village not far away to do their training. I remember going to see them in training, you know, and speaking to their commissar at the time and so on, as well. But then, I think before very long, I think the situation must have changed at the base, you know. That we had a number of commissars that came out, of course. There was Painter, there was George Aiken, and so on. But they also, but more and more, they got integrated with the battalion, you know.
Now, all these people, Painter, Aiken, they were under you when they came out, is that right?
No, because they came out after me. See, when I went back, then there was George Brown, who got killed very shortly after he came out there, he became commissar. Painter, who was there for a number of months and then went away. Johnny Mann, who became a commissar and then was returned. They worked on spells, you see. George Aiken. George Aiken was contemporary with when Copeman was beginning to... I think he became... I don't know where he became the battalion commander when George Aiken was the commissar, you know.
Yes.
And I think you'll find that there was a very... Well, there's an aftermath. It's not necessary for me to go into on that.
Mm-hmm. So these people actually took over from you?
Yes, one after... And not all of them. They didn't come together, you understand. They came at different periods.
See? So you were commissar for the first period.
Yes.
Then after you was Painter.
I think it was Painter. And then...
Aiken.
Yes. Aiken was... Aiken may have been after me. Aiken may have been after me and then Painter.
And then Painter.
Aye. Something. I can't give you the sequence, because when I was out there, then I was not, so to speak, in any way involved in arranging about who was going to go as political commissar.
Who was commissar during your second visit?
Cooney.
Bob Cooney?
Aye. He was commissar of the battalion, I tell you that, because remember then, there was a battalion separated away from the base. I remember, after all, we were in Catalonia, on the Eastern Front. In the first period, when the Albacete period took place, we were feeding the Western and the Southern Front with troops.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
And therefore, Bob, and it was a more settled leadership then. I forget, when Bill Alexander was the commander, the Battle of Teruel took place. I don't know where that was, where he was wounded. Now, he could probably tell you.
He took over from Copeman, didn't he?
Yes.
Copeman had the appendicitis.
Yeah, that's right. Alexander took over. What date was that?
Now, that was because he was wounded very shortly, and then Sam Wilde took over.
Yes, that's
and
right.
It was, I think it was the 17th or 18th of February.
38. That's right.
During
terror. That's right, because I got, as I tell you there, I took Alexander up to the border around about May or the beginning of June, 38. That means after he had been treated in hospital for a period and that sort of thing and was being sent home. Well, from the period that he went away, Sam was the battalion commander right until the battalion... He marched into London after getting off the train, you know.
And Bob Cooney was commissar
during that time.
So he was the last commissar.
Yes. Political commissar.
Yeah. That's right. How did you get on with Marty? I mean, you had a lot of contact with him.
Well, I had not terrible lot of contact with him because he was a rara. But look, I got on, how shall I put it, fairly well with him. I suppose probably as well as anybody that ever had to deal with him from the British side in that. He was a very difficult man. A very difficult man. And you'll probably hear all kinds of stories about him. I can only tell you the one story that I've told you about it. That is a sort of special thing. He sent me on missions, and I didn't argue about the missions, like down to the Southern Front or to somewhere else to do things. It wasn't my hard job to argue about it. Where I did do things and I felt it was necessary to send the report was made. And that. I very seldom discussed any report that I made with him. I know that once or twice he opened up and told me what he thought about certain things and certain people, and he had a rather, how shall I put it, suspicious attitude towards a military men and certainly towards a journalist and correspondents. I wouldn't like to go any further than that. You know who he was, you know what had happened. He had been a leader of the Black Sea Mutiny in the French fleet and that sort of thing. And he later, I understand, he was expelled from the Communist Party in France. He did a job, it seems to me, in the period in the French Navy and so on. Whether he was the ideal man for the job in the brigades at that time, I'll put it this way, I'm doubtful.
That seems to be, from every possible point of view, that seems to be the sort of general consensus of judgment on Marty.
Well, I don't want, I will put it this way, I'm not one to sit on judgment on.
No.
And I've got no personal, how shall I put it, grudge against him for anything he did to me in that sense. I mean, after all, an arbitrary manner, blustering, but very sharp, dogmatic, and so on. Well, these are things there he is, that's the man. But I didn't any time be in the position of, so to speak, that he would have to sit in judgment on something I had done. Or he didn't try to, as far as I could see.
And who was, did he?
And this man, Vidal, was his assistant, was also a Frenchman. I knew very little about. I think he had been in some, maybe may have been a journalist, I don't know even. But he'd also some military experience as well.
Presumably, Marty liaison directly with the Spanish authorities, did he?
Oh, I was, but it was a practical certainty that was what was happening. I didn't know who the liaison was between the Spanish authorities. I would suppose it would go up through the military and political command.
Did you have any contact yourself with the Spanish authorities?
No, not any more than meeting some people from time to time. For instance, I also met leading communists at the Congress and that sort of thing, Diaz and Dolores and so on. I had met and discussed with a choppage, you know.
Oh, yes.
But I didn't. He was a commander of a different division, you know, than us, and so on.
Did you?
I met Carl and got on very well with him, and was very pleased to meet him again back in England again.
Who was this one?
Hans Carl.
Carl. Oh,
yeah. That's it.
Yeah. Did you have any contact with this brigade commander Burillo?
No.
You didn't meet him.
Walter was a man that I had probably
fair amount.
And of course, I was in touch with this General Gaul, who was the commander of the brigade at the time of the Harama affair. You know.
Yes. Yeah. He was replaced by Chopic, wasn't he?
Aye. And I think not before time, if I may say so.
Really?
Well, that was my impression.
Mm.
Of course, at that time, at the time I'm talking about, now that was after the First Battle of Harama, Jock Cunningham, I think, was the commander of the battalion.
Yes.
And Jock had the idea that he should be the brigade commander. Well, that's all I'm saying. He had that idea. Yeah. It should be.
There was one point, I think it was just after the Harama, that there was a call to stop cell meetings within the brigades, within the battalions. Was that right?
I never came across that.
No. Wasn't there
I know that there was some problems, because I know that the Americans had held meetings, quite comprehensive meetings, to discuss what had happened in connection with the getting these orders to go into attacks that were very, very expensive. Because I came up once and more or less stumbled on one of these kind of meetings. I didn't get there because they had somebody on guard in connection with it. So I can't go into any detail on that.
And the meetings were stopped to prevent this discussion?
I think it's probably one of the things. But as I say, I couldn't comment on that at all. Therefore, I wouldn't like to make an observation on it, because I wasn't involved in that.
Yeah. There was also something about the... there was something from the ranks about discrimination in the brigade in favour of party members against the ordinary... non-party members.
Well, it didn't take place when I was, at least I didn't hear of that during the period that I was there.
Were you involved at all in that famous dinner that was given by Gao for the 15th Brigade, when there was a rumpus over Klaus?
No.
Did you hear about that?
No.
You didn't?
No.
No. Okay.
Good.
Is there any final thing, that we haven't said about Spain that you'd like to say?
I don't think so. I mean, first of all, of course, looking back on the thing, and it was, how shall I put it, in many ways it was a privilege to get the experience. And I was lucky in the sense that my first experience was in the formative period, and the second was when it was obvious that there had been formed an army, but also obvious that we were already reaching the stage where the overwhelming superiority in material and also in men, because of the Condor Legion, the Italian, the troops, tanks and all that sort of thing, the Avion, which was a terrific thing. Yeah. I may say, when we saw the small...
Chattos.
Aye, Chattos. It was a terrific effect on the lads, at the Harama front and that. But it's also a very saddening thing to think of all the sacrifice that was made, and to know that it really was defeated primarily because of the action of our own government and the governments of France. Of course, the Americans hide behind that, but the bloody Americans supplied a terrific amount of petrol and lorries and that sort of thing to Franco. But to think that it could have been stopped, because there's no doubt about it that after the failure to get the big cities, Madrid, Barcelona, Valencia, Valencia, Malaga, all these, the Basque cities. After the failure to get that at the beginning of the uprising, it was only a matter of time, and you've got quotes from American ambassadors and others that said that. You've also got the quotes from this bloody Italian, what was his name, that was he's married Mussolini's daughter, it was the foreign minister, how he said...
Wasn't it Grandi? Was it Grandi?
No, it wasn't
Ciano.
Huh? Ciano. Yeah. How that if they had a... they were only put in so many thousands of pesetas and men, or lira and men, and how many millions it came to before they were finished. And you've got to only look at the kind of air force that the Germans built up to realise how the odds were a state, and Britain and France stopping them from even getting the arms that they could have got from the they got some from the Soviet Union, but when the ships were all starting to be sunk by the submarines, and the Czech machine guns and all the Skoda stuff was stopped. Well, that was it. And the fact that they hung on to April 1939, in spite of all that, was a terrific tribute to them, and of course the suffering that's gone on since then. Of course, the fascists have transformed Spain from many respects to an more industrial country, etc., and dug in on the international monopolies in Spain, of course. But that's the, in my opinion, the terrible thing. You think that 20 million or so people have had to go through all this purgatory of about 40 years. Mm-hmm. And still, they haven't even got even a substantial shadow of the kind of things that are necessary.
Yes.
After all, they'll have to have legal political parties, all political parties in Spain. They'll have to have legally recognized trade unions that are independent and that elect their own leaders. And they'll have to have the prisoners amnestied, all of them, and the return of all the exiles, including the people like of the former governments, the few survivors that there are of it, and the elections on some kind of democratic basis for a parliament, a cortes. They'll need to have the... Before we can really say that you've got rid of the main elements of fascism.
Don't you think the danger in Spain is always the right rather than the left? The right wing rather than the left wing? Yeah, I mean...
Well, I'll put it this way. Look, I would say that both of them are a danger. What's the most immediate danger? At the moment, the most immediate danger is the right, because they are trying to dig in and resist the changes. The left, of course, by their ultra actions, and especially by the terrorism, and that's the tragedy of the Basque position, are providing the basis for the resistance that is being made to the democratic process. That's the tragedy of Spain. And, of course, it's also part, in a way, tragedy of Portugal, which we don't need to go into here. But I would say that in Spain you've got this, you've got a party, as far as the left are concerned, the Communist Party, which has a terrific amount of experience, which is a mature organisation, and which, in my opinion, it'll make mistakes. But its basic line is about the only possible line that could be operated with any real hope of success and an outcome that would give you some kind of a democracy in Spain.
Yeah.
That, it seems to me, is the great positive thing that exists. And look at the heroes they have. This bloke, Camacho, gets jailed, and then he's let out, and he comes out and makes statements and gets flung back in jail again, and he's out again. Look at the lads that have been executed, you know, the main ones. This is the kind of thing that produced all the martyrs. The tragedy is that have they go on producing them, or can we reach a stage soon when we'll get this change? And I believe we can. I think that they're like Canute now, the establishment in Spain, but don't kid yourself, they'll only give up as it's wrenched from them, not necessarily by physical force, but wrenched from them by the mass pressure. And also, there could be help, but they're not getting help by the kind of pressure that a so-called democratic governments in Western Europe and the United States. But the United States are in a bloody problem. After all, look at the bases that they might be faced with losing if the right-wing grip is overturned. These are all part of the problem. And all we can do is do everything we possibly can in order to keep the issue of Spain to the fore and get as much support as possible. Now, I've given you a list of people and the trade union movement have associated with these demands. It happens to be a list of nearly, certainly the most important part of the General Council of the TUC. Every one of them is a General Council member. And then some of them are right-wingers, like the postman bloc. But the postmen in Spain have a very militant record at the present moment, as you know. Anyway, there it is.
Thanks very much indeed.